Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
What are you talking about, Willis?
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Primetime with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, what it do?
Ahoy!
What's up? What's going on today?
Facing a bit of an existential crisis right now.
Aww.
I think we all are.
Why?
Do we have to like a white guy from Duke? Yeah. That just happened.
What do you mean?
We're all facing it right now. Every one of us.
You mean Cooper Flagg?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do we have to like him?
Because all of a sudden everyone loves him and it's like capture the flag.
Wait,
and
everyone.
Popular thing going right now in like college basketball.
Isn't every white guy from Duke the most popular thing
going
in college
basketball?
No, we all
hate white. No one likes anyone. If you're not a Duke fan, you instantly hate. He's a white kid from Maine at Duke and now we're liking him?
Who's saying that anyone likes him?
Oh, people are saying it.
People are saying it. You sound like Trump.
Yeah, people are saying it.
What does that even mean?
A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people. Like, everyone's rooting for Cooper Flagg.
If you do it anymore, you're going to have problems.
And he looked great. And this morning, I was listening to, radio. I was flipping around. And everyone's like, oh, my God. Like, everyone loves Cooper
Flagg. Every single person on the radio.
Where is the arbitrary hate for the white kid from Duke?
Well, I'll start it.
Thank you.
Can't stand him.
Someone has to.
And I don't think he
did. Someone needs to have the brave cojones to say, hey, you may be a nice kid. You may be the best player to come out in a generation. You're white. You're from Maine. You play at Duke. We hate you.
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought that was understood.
I thought so, too.
But apparently everybody loves him.
What kind of world are we living in? This is where we're at? What sort of tolerant world do we have
now?
Well,
first of all,
we're not arbitrarily hating the white kid from Duke.
I got to tell you, I don't believe you.
Well, Danny and Dusty were talking about it today. Colin was talking about it today.
There's three.
The ESPN morning show was talking about it.
Four.
Yeah. Yeah. The
That's
national
pretty
media.
Pretty much everybody.
The media. Fake news. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, we'll hate him. He'll do something stupid. Remember the Filipowski thing? Remember him?
Yeah.
The last big white guy from Duke?
We all hated him.
Well, we did, but we didn't until he had that run-in with the fan. Remember that?
We didn't hate him before that?
I don't think
so. Oh, the court storming run-in, yeah.
Yeah, remember that? So when that happened, then
injury.
It's like, ugh. See, because the obnoxious white kid from Duke will always show his true colors.
Well, I hope so.
And so, just wait.
Yeah.
It's because I think Duke may play Kansas next week, I think.
Well, let's start the hate now. Because
right?
I thought we had a long tradition of arbitrarily from Christian Laettner, right? I mean, it's bad enough. We kind of like Jay Billis, but he was like kind of before we all started hating the white guy from Duke. From Grayson Allen to Bobby Hurley to Filipowski. I'll throw in a Cherokee Parks there.
Duke plays Kansas Thanksgiving week.
Oh, yeah.
The 26th.
Okay. They play Kentucky next week.
And now all of a sudden, just because everyone's in the capture the flag or the poop for Coop, now all of a sudden we're liking Cooper Flagg.
Flags! For Coop?
Poop for Coop.
Is that the thing?
Yeah, well, it's capture the flag, but I prefer poop for Coop.
By the way, no one explained the rules of capture the flag to the freaking Blazers.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Well, they want
Delano Banton, that's what they're doing.
The Bantman is here too.
Maybe he hates arbitrarily the white guy from Duke, and he's like, not on my watch. Not happening here. And you know what? I can respect
this. My team. Yeah.
Who's
franchise cornerstone,
guy?
Delano Banton.
Is it Ace Frehley or something? Like, who's the
Ace Frehley, that's right.
Ace Frehley from Kiss?
No, Ace Bailey.
Ace Bailey.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose.
Is he white?
No,
he's not.
Arius Ace Bailey.
Yeah. I like the idea of signing Ace Frehley. Does he still got some game left in him? Like, Prince, I guess, had like a mad crossover. Maybe Ace shoots a mean step-back jumper. He's probably like 70, but...
Ace Bailey's at Rutgers?
Yeah, he's at Rutgers.
What?
Ace Frehley, by the way, 73. And, boy, it's looking a little rough. Looking a little rough. I also don't know what his height is.
How the hell do you think Rutgers?
He's 6'1". Scoot height.
How do you think Rutgers gets Ace Bailey?
Money. I don't know.
Is he from out there?
Yeah, I think he's from out there, yeah. I don't know if he's from Jersey, but I think he's an East kid. And there may be a connection there, that and just a bag full of cash. I don't know. Yeah. Here's a Sports Illustrated, how Rutgers became an unexpected landing spot for two basketball recruits.
There we go. Guess I need to go read up.
Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey.
Who's Dylan Harper?
He's another big-time recruit. Supposedly this draft, white kid? Besides the white kid, no, they're both black.
Great.
Yeah. Suppose not just Cooper Flag. This is supposed to be a really good draft.
So how did Cooper Flag do last night in the big debut?
He had like 18-7-5, and yeah, he looked good. Yeah, Flags! Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one reason why we can already start hating him.
All right, let's go.
He's already got the, I just Googled it, he's already got the Bronny James headline.
What?
Like the misleading headline, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like this says, Cooper Flag drops 18 points, throws down massive dunk in Duke debut.
What happened?
Did he? Well, did he throw down a
I saw a dunk. He drove to the lane and he dunked. It was kind of in traffic.
Yeah, was it a massive dunk, though?
I mean,
is
he
that
did
a little
with,
hyperbolic?
He did it with force, but it wasn't like it was, you know, he didn't destroy anybody.
See, they're trying to tell us it was better than it was. And that's
remember, Cooper has an ace brother, Ace Flag.
Ace Flag.
Can roll is going
now,
to Maine.
Did he play at, on the Maine team that they just they played Maine last night?
No, he's so Cooper.
He just committed.
Cooper Flagg's supposed to be a high school senior. Cooper Flagg reclassified so that he could get to the NBA sooner. His brother, the loser of the Flags, he won't be in college till next year.
Okay.
I think he, yeah. So easy.
So he didn't play against his brother.
He didn't play against his brother. But he did drop 18-7-5. So.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
I just didn't like all of a sudden that we're all supposedly just rooting for the white kid from Duke. And I, you know, hey. Call me crazy, but I'm old school. Well, I hate the white kid. The white kid from Duke.
Well, if you want to see white kids get knocked down a peg, I hope you watch the Gonzaga Baylor game because Mark Few's kid got in garbage time minutes and he got the hammer dropped on him.
What do you mean?
Yeah, the
dunk of the night, a poster of all posters in garbage
up
time.
Up in his business.
Mark Few's kid, John Few, got a couple minutes at the end of the game. And even though Gonzaga won by like 38.
Yeah, Gonzaga like blew him out.
A kid on Baylor just absolutely destroyed Few's kid on a breakaway.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
Now that's the sort of white kid basketball hate that I can get behind.
Now that's a massive dunk.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God. John! Little Johnny Few.
Poor
getting
little
in
John.
There.
Do you think he gets in again?
This is like when they Izzo would put his kid in at the end of games.
Yeah.
And you always just want someone to just throw down.
You're up 40. Get out of the way.
Yeah. Oh, dude, the kid, I mean, let's get
No, he's
the,
doing the valiant thing. He's trying to take the charge.
He went up like two-handed, and the kid from Baylor just cocks back on him.
He wasn't even trying to take the charge. He
jumped.
He tried to challenge him. Oh, my God.
Ah. Well, I mean, sometimes you don't know you're a... You
little
know,
Johnny Few.
You don't know your jumping ability. It's like when you think you're doing something really athletic, and then you see video of yourself, and you're like, ooh, that's it's not so good. Like every now and then, like I'll look at my golf swing. Like my buddy who's like helping me out, he'll like videotape it. He's like, hey, check this out. And you're like, oh, my God.
I know. You think it looks way better than
it does. In my mind, I'm like, oh, this is all fluid, and like, oh, it's coming around, and then he shows it to me, and you're just, it's an unfolded launcher.
By the way,
you're
it's
like,
Joe Few, not
Joe.
Yeah. Joe Few.
Little Joey Few. Yeah.
Well, VJ, was it Edgecombe or Ed something?
Yeah, I think VJ Edgecombe.
Edgera gonna dunk on your ass, and it was hilarious. But yeah, Gonzaga won by like 40, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, they beat, like, Baylor's like number 8.
Yeah.
They hammered him.
Man. But then he like stood over Few's kid, you know, he's just down there like, damn it. He's like, sorry, like his dad's like, all right, son, go ahead and prove your worth, and just gets, just, what was the... What was the Kevin Durant one? The guy's like, Durant, you're a cheese butt. Yeah, he got cheese butted there. It's just brutal.
Well, at least his kid plays.
Does he?
Well, I mean, you know, he's got a spot on the team.
No, he has a spot on the team because that's the same way of saying.
Well, I know why. I'm just saying, at least he has a spot on the team.
It's the same way that, like, Bronny's a Laker. It's like, eh.
Maybe Joe should go play for Maine.
You know what? I think he'd probably be better off playing at Maine, but, you know. I'm guessing he just. Happy to.
It's probably one of those things where he's like the human victory cigar when they throw him out there. That's the sign that the game is over and you've won, and so everyone celebrates him.
And he probably gets some skush, you know. He probably gets some Few cast offs, you know, walking around, you know, just wearing the uniform. I guarantee that's the kid that wears his warm up everywhere to every class. Everyone on that campus knows what little Few is all about.
Oh, that's Mark's kid,
100%. And believe me, he won't. And he probably drives around like in a G wagon. That daddy paid for, and it's good. I guarantee that kid's an obnoxious douche, but it's good to be him on that campus.
Phil Self's kid played at Kansas for 5 years.
Do anything?
No. No. He was down at the end of the bench.
Well, again,
but he'd get in garbage time. And I think he's now a GM in the G League.
Oh, okay. Well, that's something. No nepotism there or whatever.
Mm-mm.
We had a...
not at all.
I'm trying to think if we had any of that. Our defensive line coach's kid was walked on as an old lineman at BYU, and we all hated him, and he was terrible. But the problem was, like, he actually thought that he was, like, going to play. Like, he didn't understand that he was only there because his dad. And so he, like, you wanted to feel bad for him, but you couldn't. Everyone just hated him because he just constantly thought that he was getting jobbed by not playing. We're like, dude, you're, like, 5'10", and you're, like, 250. Go away.
Feels like it happens in basketball a lot, though. I mean, you mentioned... We got Few, Self, Buddy Boeheim was a thing. Yeah. It seems like it happens a bunch.
Yeah. Well, in basketball, it's a little easier. Football, you just get beat up so bad, like you can literally get murdered or get someone else killed. Like if you're a bad old lineman. Basketball, I think you can just kind of stand out there at the 3-point line, like at the local YWCA, and huck up some threes with your ridiculous tricolored ball. Whereas, you know, football, again, you're going to get hurt. Unless you're the Few kid, then you get yammed on in the biggest moment.
Well, as long as you show you're a good teammate and you're not, you know, you're not ruffling feathers.
Yeah, you'd be fine.
You can find a spot for the head coach's kid. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, and the other kids probably have to be somewhat nice because, well,
it's
the head coach's kid.
Exactly.
You know. You think at some point, like, Few has to, like, look, I get it. Like, my kid kind of is annoying, but everyone just shut up and placate him, all right? Just... humor him every now and then, and he'll get you some water.
Well, guys, big show today.
Big show.
You know what tonight is?
College football playoff Maxion? Ranking reveal.
That's right.
I think the Mac's playing on the CW tonight.
Maction starts, yeah.
College football
midweek Maction
playoff rankings come out tonight, and it's going to be confusing.
And that's the only thing that's happening tonight. Yeah. That and a lot of hockey.
NFL trade deadline.
You know what else I heard today? A lot of people are talking about massive cheating in the college football polls. The police are on their way to investigate, so just don't worry.
What police?
We're going to get to the college football police.
Is it Mike Riley?
I actually saw that the Penn State police are going to investigate the whole Jason Kelsey thing, and people had lots of jokes about them being quick to investigate that, but not some other crimes that happened at Penn State.
Oh, yeah.
Whoops.
Like the diddling of children?
Yeah, like that.
By a coach?
Yeah. Yep. Someone the other day, when I said that I refused to ever root for Penn State, some Penn State fan had the nerve to ask me what Penn State ever did. And I was like...
Well, that's the wrong response.
That's a non-engaged question.
I was like, are you serious? Like, at first I was like, clearly it's a troll. But no, it was like a super Penn State fan that was upset saying that I was judging Penn State. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do that. Your entire fan base rioted because you fired a coach for, oh, I don't know, ignoring child rape for the better part of 2 decades. Just saying.
All right, well, we've got a big show today. We're going to get the college football playoff rankings in at 4. The NFL trade deadline has come and gone. Some moves.
Yeah, a couple little sneaky nice moves.
The thing I'd like to talk about is why it's so lopsided, you know? The trade deadline.
Oh.
Well, it's like, it just feels like you can trade a 7th for a Pro Bowler.
Yes.
You know, and it's kind of stupid. And I wonder if it needs to be looked at.
We can discuss.
That's what we do here. We discuss.
Yes.
So let's get started with our poll question.
Because we're men of increase.
Coming up next.
Being a man of increase.
On The Fan.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, being a man of increase.
Prime Time with Asachi and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
I would crush it.
All right, nice to have you along. Tuesday program, Rop and Sook. Let's get to our polls. They are on X at 1080 The Fan. Yesterday we asked you, what did we ask you? We asked you, which era of Duck football was or is the most fun? What do you think won?
I might say this one. Simply because there's so much excitement about where this is going, but the Chip Kelly one should win.
Well, which one is it?
I'm saying this one. This one won, but it shouldn't.
Chip Kelly.
All right.
Era.
Good.
59%.
That's the one that should win.
Dan Lanning era, 34%. And the Brooks Bilotti era, 7%.
You know, people love what's recent and, you know, unanimous number one and people saying that you're the favorite.
They are better now.
I see people getting caught up in it.
But more fun?
Yeah.
Come on.
No.
Was there anything more fun than that run?
That Chip four-year run was bananas.
If you're a Duck fan, that is.
Just didn't end the way you wanted it to end.
And then, of course, I put the Brooks Bilotti era on there for the old school people who are like, I wish it was the way it used to be.
Well, they that was a pretty unique thing when you think about how many coaches they had that stayed around forever. And
Those were fun years, too.
Absolutely, and they laid the foundation for this whole thing. Say what you will about Phil and Nike and all that, but you had to make good hires, and they did. They made good hires.
So today's poll question, in honor of the college football playoff rankings coming out in about an hour, we are asking you on X at 1080 The Fan, which college football team is most overrated?
Mm.
Indiana, Miami,
we just rolled, brother.
BYU, or Notre Dame?
Boy, that's good.
Vote.
Well, I don't get they rain my head cold, but they're...
Like, before this, I would have said Penn State.
Did he say head cold in there?
I have no idea. No, that was former Notre Dame head coach. Lou Holtz.
I think he said vote for Trump.
Vote in, vote hard.
Yeah, I would have said Penn State. I was not a big Penn State guy. So this is where I'm going to go, Miami. And by the way, Miami might be the best of those teams, but Miami's most overrated because I think we look at BYU, we look at Indiana, and we think that the wheels will come off that eventually. Like, no one really...
You think they'll, like, full-on wheels off? Like,
well, wheels off, but I mean...
Or you just mean play a better team.
Play a better
lose.
Team, right? Indiana hasn't really played anybody, and they won't. So if Indiana loses to Ohio State, even if it's a close game, we're going to do the, well, look at that, see? And so I don't know how many people are fully buying into Indiana. BYU, one, the Big 12, not a ton of respect for it. And BYU, you know, it's the Mormon thing. And we just, like, BYU just doesn't have the horses. We know that. So I don't think any people really consider BYU a national title contender. Notre Dame, it's like, God, you lost to Cincinnati. So again, there's expectations there. But with Miami, people look at Miami and they look at Cam Ward and they look at Martinez and Restrepo and they're undefeated. And so, like, people talk about Miami like they're a national title contender. Miami is overrated. Miami is a one-dimensional team that plays no defense that's very lucky to be undefeated. So even though this is, like, two things can be true, Miami may be the best of those teams. Don't get me wrong. If we played on a neutral field, I'm not certain that Miami doesn't come out of that with those four, but Miami is overrated in that people are giving them the benefit of the doubt and not to those others, and I am not. Because having watched Miami play, they are damn lucky, and they don't play defense at all. So Miami is my answer.
So vote and vote hard. I will say that Miami, with three games remaining, you know, I was thinking about the playoffs. You know, they could be the number one seed in the whole thing.
If some other people stumble.
Well, Oregon, we need to lose,
and
they could in the Big Ten title game.
Yeah,
Miami is undefeated, and then they have Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse left.
Sure.
And then in the ACC, and not that they won't lose one of those games, they very easily could.
But more than likely, they will not.
They should be favored in all three.
Yes.
And then they'll be 12-0, and they have the ACC title game, and that'll probably be like, what, SMU?
SMU, unless Pitt? I'd have to look and see what SMU has, but I believe SMU has the inside track.
I mean... Yeah, that's doable that they're 13-0 and
we just
Oregon
rolled, brother.
Stumbles. Who's left for number one?
No, I mean, it's a valid point.
They'd be the number one
seed.
And
if they are number one, that will be a really, really flawed number one team. And like, again, not that Miami can't win. They have to beat someone 45-42, which you can do.
Hey, they beat Ball State 62-0.
Ooh, very exciting. We have seen, and this is why I like Oregon. This year is that Oregon can beat you in more than one way. When we have seen teams like this traditionally that have these unbelievable offenses that score a gajillion points and can beat you with you know, throwing the ball, running the ball, but they don't really play one side and the schedule is a little soft. We've seen in the past when those teams play balanced teams, like think about those Oklahoma teams with like Jason White and Heupel and those guys. And they would then go to the big dance and they would play like Florida. Right. And Florida doesn't have an offense that looks like Oklahoma, but it was a balanced team. It was a real team. They would just get the break speed off of them. I mean, if you play Miami and you just get a handful of stops, you can beat them. They are very, very one dimensional. They're just the inverse of like Penn State or Iowa, and that they just You know, they need to beat you 17 to, you know, or I guess 20 to 17, and Miami needs to beat you 45-42. And I just don't like one-dimensional teams when you play against better squads. So I'm not a Miami believer.
Yeah, you gotta grind it out. You got to be able to grind it out.
Yeah.
That's what the SEC teams always do.
Yes.
You know?
They drag you into deep water.
All those championship teams, they grind it out. And, you know, Michigan was that last year, too.
Yes.
They just grind you. And Oregon has a little bit of that this year.
Feels like it.
But you're right. Miami doesn't.
No.
Like, you drag them into that type of game. Mm.
Well, I'll tell you what. Their offense doesn't blink. Their offense going to still sling it. But it's like, if you're waiting on Miami to get a big stop, and that's what you need to do. Like, you don't have to be the world's best defense, but you need to be able to get off the field on third down or make a big red zone stop. And like some of those Oregon teams that played for national titles before, I remember the year with like Casey Matthews and those guys. That was not a great defense by any stretch of the imagination.
No, they were opportunistic. They had a lot of takeaways. They held a lot of teams to field goals instead of touchdowns.
You know,
but they gave up yards.
And they gave up yards. They took chances. But it was with a dynamic offense, you could get away with that. And Miami doesn't have that. Miami just has a bad defense with a really, really good offense and a guy who may be the best player in college football in Cam Ward. And you need that. And you need him every week to show up, because if you don't, you get beat. And they should have been beat a couple times this year.
I feel like that's defense now in college football, though.
A lot of it, yeah.
It's like the stats don't look the same as they used to, because it's really, you know, I mean, like, you could be a good defense and give up 30 a game.
Yeah.
I'm serious. You can in college football.
Yeah.
Like, nobody really, you look around college football, nobody really has a lockdown defense.
No, but
at
I don't
all.
Like
but,
that you give up 35 to Cal and Virginia Tech. And,
well, yeah, yeah.
Know,
no, I'm not saying,
Duke.
Yeah, I'm not making a case for Miami. What I'm saying is the idea of good defense and
changing.
What that is has changed.
Absolutely.
And it's changed to the point of what you're saying. It's like Oregon gave up 34 to Boise, 32 to Ohio State. They'll give up points. But key third downs, not beating yourself with penalties and stupid things like that, and just having big studs. You mentioned Clay Matthews. You know, just having big studs that go make a play when you need a play.
Yeah.
And that's part of what we're talking about when you grind out these games. That's really what defense is. It's not measured by, they only give up 200 yards per game anymore. It's just not, that's not sustainable in college football anymore.
I mean, look at the Oregon-Ohio State game. Both of those offenses kind of did what they wanted. But both of those defenses made plays. You had the big strip with Harmon, right? That was a huge turning point.
And you frankly had another one with Bosa that didn't get called.
That didn't get called. Ohio State had a monster stop at the end to get the ball back, right? And give them a
fourth
chance.
Fourth and goal, yeah.
You know, and keep them out of the end zone. You know, they both of those squads made plays to give their team the chance to win. And then, you know, you can say what you will, like Ohio State kind of S'd the bed, but Oregon's defense ultimately held them. You know, they ran out of time, but they held them. They didn't give it up at the end. So it's like, you know, and both of those are really good teams, but you're right in that neither one of those defenses, because we talk about them both as being good defensive teams. If we're being honest, neither one of those defenses played great. I mean, it's just, there were multiple times in each game where you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, they made plays, but across the board, they didn't get stops.
No.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Georgia has a good defense?
They do, but it's not the Georgia defense that we're used to seeing.
Okay, but they have a good defense.
They have a good defense.
Yeah, well, they gave up 41 to Alabama.
Exactly.
And they still have a good defense.
Yeah.
So.
Because like you said, in the second half, they finally pulled their head out of their ass and were like, oh, we should probably play, and yet they still couldn't get a stop at the end.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, someone's saying last year, UW had a timely defense last year. Wasn't a good defense, but it was a timely defense.
Championship level defense.
And it got them because they had a dynamic offense. That's the sort of team that I'm talking about.
Well, and that was the kind of team that, like, Oregon team that played Ohio State was that way.
Yes.
The offense with Mariota was amazing. Defense didn't quite have the dudes. It was opportunistic all season.
Penix and Dunze and Polk and all those guys.
Same
that offense
model.
Was bananas. And you had enough dudes at the end between Muhammad, who's nicely on Oregon this year, and some of those edge guys. And it was enough. It was enough until you played.
Not quite.
Well, yeah. That's,
not quite enough.
It was
buddy.
Enough till the very last game.
It was enough to the very last game. And then you played Michigan. It was like, Michigan was real good.
Vote on our poll question on X at 1080 The Fan today. It is, which college football team is most overrated? Indiana, Miami, BYU, Notre Dame. Vote hard. Coming up next, the NFL trade deadline has come and gone. Why is it so lopsided? Here's Buck. Red Hot Blazers.
Break them up.
Idiots.
Now 3-5.
Hey, man.
Look at Buck calling them idiots.
Hey, you know who ain't tanking?
What's the mission here?
Banton. He ain't tanking.
No. I mean, I get guys that have to play for their contracts and all that, but man.
You roll him out there, and he drops 20 in 12 minutes, which, by the way.
Eight games in, you got three wins, you're out of the capture the flag game. You're out.
I saw that no Blazer had ever done that.
Ever done what?
20 points in 12 minutes.
What?
Yeah.
That's it?
20 in 12 minutes?
I mean.
That's hard to do.
No Blazer's
less
ever
than
done
a quarter?
I think it's the highest. Second highest this year behind LeBron. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, Lillard gets white hot and shoots like. You know, 50-footers and...
Yeah, he's no Delano Banton.
Well, apparently not.
Yeah, where's Duop Reith?
What's Banton making?
6 cents? I don't know. Probably nothing.
6 cents.
I think Danny was saying that his contract's not even guaranteed for this year until January.
Two-year, $4.2 million deal.
Oh, more than
Oh, wait, that. No, hold on. That was when he was in Boston. Hold on. Hold on. Stand by. I don't have it right now. I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
It's a guaranteed salary of $217,000, by the way.
This says he makes $2
million. But. Yeah, but I don't think that's what Danny was saying, is his contract's not even guaranteed at the $2 million until January.
Look at the Blazers ripping off their own players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2 years, four point whatever.
Who do they think they are, Odyssey?
But in January, that this year it gets guaranteed. So Batman,
an Odyssey station.
He's still out there playing, brother.
Duper!
Well, that's great. Okay, so the NFL trade deadline came and went today.
Mm-hmm.
We had several trades. Marshawn Lattimore
mm-hmm.
went from the Saints to the Commies.
We'll see, by the way, if his hamstring magically heals.
The Cowboys got Jonathan Mingo, who I forgot about.
Yeah, well, everyone did.
Yeah, and he was with the Panthers.
And I would like to point out, he's got like 120 yards receiving this year.
Yeah,
and he can't crack the lineup. On the Panthers.
On the Panthers.
I'm fascinated in the sense that they got a fifth-round pick in return for Amari Cooper.
And that same fifth round was the price tag for DeAndre Hopkins.
And they traded a fourth-rounder.
For Jonathan Mingo.
For Jonathan Mingo.
Mingo must be great.
Isn't that the Cowboys in a nutshell, though?
Boy, I'll tell you what. I would like to do some sort of garage sale swap with Jerry Jones. And by the way, your quarterback's out for at least a month. He's going on IR. Like, you're bad. Like, you're just a bad team. So, you would assume, and by the way, your O-line is getting old. Zach Martin, who's one of the best guards to ever play, has an ailing back. Your O-line is not what it was. You have holes all over your defense. You would think that a fourth-round pick would be something, again, that you would like to keep, because this team needs to get younger. It needs to get more talented. And you went out and... I just don't know. This is the one trade, because you asked me why guys get traded. And for the most part, you can look at trades. There's like three different kinds of trades in the NFL, and you can see where they fall into. Can I put that there's a fourth? So like a lot of times it's a bad contract that didn't work out, bad fit, and I'm just looking to get out from underneath it. And then the other one is a position of need, like with Lattimore, and you overpaid for it. He was the only guy that really came with a steep price tag where Washington had to give up a bunch. I'm going to put in a fourth category, and that's just you're dumb. And I normally reserve this for like the Raiders. But boy, I just don't have an answer for what Dallas is doing.
Well... Yeah, I mean, they have a bad owner.
You have got to be smoking something over there.
But there's
got to
be someone else there that's like, what are we doing?
Nah, they're all yes men.
I guess. It's
very
strange.
They're all yes men, because isn't the GM like his son or something?
Yeah.
We also had Za'Darius Smith going to the Lions as expected from the Browns.
That's a nice one. I thought maybe they would swing a little higher.
And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off.
Well, they got room. They got room to go out. So I was wondering on some of these teams that are you know, tanking, see the Browns. And maybe they did acquire about, you know, a bigger Browns pass rusher, maybe with the Raiders or Jacksonville. But Smith is a pro. And, you know, he's a guy that brings pressure and he's not a star, but he is just a productive player. And he was going to opt out of his deal next year with Cleveland. He was going to be gone. So, like, this is one of those, if you're Cleveland, you got something for him, whereas at the end of the year, he just would have walked. So,
well, isn't that, yeah, okay, so before I get to the, well, here, I'll just tell you who else got traded today. Yeah. Mike Williams, the receiver of the Jets, goes to the Steelers. And
for
then,
a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, you got Khalil Davis from the Texans, defensive lineman, going to the Niners.
Yeah.
The Ravens got Tre'Davious White from the Rams.
The problem with him is, like, I mean, at one point, he was one of the, and this is the other thing with trades, hear Tre'Davious White, and we're like, oh, God, I remember Tre'Davious White. Yeah, you remember Tre'Davious White before he got hurt. He played in the first four. He started the first 4 weeks with the Rams, and it was bad. He just isn't the same player. Gave up four touchdowns, I think, in 4 weeks. Bad coverage grade. And so, you know, the Rams don't want anything to do with him at this point. And so you're hoping, if you're the Ravens, didn't cost you anything, and you're hoping that in your system and maybe a little more motivated and a little more time and he gets healthy, he can regain some of that form. But this is not the same player that we saw a number of years ago when he was one of the best young corners in the league.
So I get why these trades happen. You know, these teams are just trying to recoup something for a player that they know that doesn't fit or there is going to move on, right? Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
But they're selling these guys for pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
And I wonder if something needs to be done about this, because it just really feels like it's easier than ever for, well, like the Chiefs, for example, picking off DeAndre Hopkins for a fifth.
Yep.
Well, DeAndre Hopkins looked good last night. Yep.
We all tilted the outcome of Monday Night Football.
That is a huge get for them.
Yeah.
And they only had to pay a fifth for it. It's kind of, I would imagine that's frustrating for some teams, you know, that the best team, like when you're on the top, you don't have to pay much to really help your team for a playoff run. And it doesn't seem to have been that way. It doesn't seem to have been this way that long.
No, it's changing in that so many teams now just view draft capital so much more valuable than aging players. And the key is with all of these guys, they're aging players that make money. And so when you look at DeAndre Hopkins, big impact last night with the Chiefs, right? And he will be a nice addition. But on 20 to 25 NFL teams, he's nothing. Like we just saw it, right? If he's in Tennessee, he's nothing. If he's in Carolina, he's nothing. If he's in New Orleans, he's nothing. In Jacksonville, he's nothing. Even at a solid team. Right, that let's try to take I don't know who's like a middle of the Denver Broncos, right? He's nothing. He's just he can't really separate anymore. He's not a guy that draws double teams, anything like that. And so for most of the league, you look at him, and I'd have to look his numbers from a contract standpoint, but you know he's not dirt cheap. And so you look at Tennessee, that was like, dude, this does nothing for us. And so there just isn't a big market, anyone that's willing to give anything for him other than a good team like Kansas City that's like, hey, we're just going to ask you to do a limited thing here. We're not asking you to be the old DeAndre Hopkins. Basically, we just need you to be big on third down. By the way, we have the best third down quarterback in the history of the NFL. We're going to put you in a nice little spot, and we're going to use you in this little box, and it's going to work. And so it really becomes a thing where only a handful of teams in the NFL can use a guy like that, and it just so happens it's the really good teams. And so it's frustrating when the good teams seemingly pick these guys off, but when the bad teams, you know, get them, which there's no need for them to get them, it turns out to be an unmitigated disaster.
That's very true. And it does seem like pass rushers are the same.
Yes.
Because if you have one that somebody else could use, but you suck, it doesn't do any good. Nope. It's like, might as well trade him and get something for him.
Yep.
It's just that they're going for next to nothing.
Yep.
Maybe that's...
because there's no market for him.
That's what it is. Well, there is a market for him. It's just only a couple of teams. And I think those couple of teams are all smart. And they're like, you know, they're not going to overpay for this stuff.
Nope. They are not, you know, and so it's just, it's a weird thing that in the NFL, at least there are some teams like the Rams are one. The Rams, you know, came out a number of years ago, like, dude, we don't give a rip about draft picks. Like, we want players. And it led to a Super Bowl. And now, you know, they've kind of had to go back the other way because they're taking on the chops as they've rebuilt that roster. But, you know, I just like that the trade deadline, it's more active than it used to be.
I do like that too. And it's always kind of fun to see the good teams beef up a little bit.
Yeah.
At the same time, it just creates this divide.
Yeah.
And they don't really have to, they don't, not only do they not have to pay much, they're not on the hook for much.
Nope.
Past.
Lattimore was the only one that really got any sort of real compensation going back.
Yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if anything needs to be done about that, but it is definitely.
Yes, it is
a thing now.
It is the most unique thing in sports, the way the NFL views good players that are still productive and what their but value is.
I think the flip side is it's really cool because, like in baseball, trade deadline, you know, you get down to the trade deadline, trade deadline, you watch these teams all year and you go, well, they need this, this, and this. Yeah. Well, it's kind of cool that they have the trade deadline that they can go out and acquire that.
Yep.
And it's the same with the NFL. It just never used to be a thing. Nope. Like, they just, this was your team. You had to coach up who you got, or that's it.
Yeah, not anymore.
It's kind of nice that they can go fill gaps, but at the same time, I don't know if it hurts the league in a sense that it's just harder to catch up to the elite teams.
Well, and it's hard to think, but in the NFL, when you're 30, we look at you and they're like, you're 30. And that's not the same in other sports. Because if you know who doesn't get traded at the deadline, 25-year-old really good players. Because they've got 5 years still to go in their prime, and they're usually on pretty affordable contracts.
Yeah, the NFL,
they don't get dealt.
The NFL's like the only sport that almost, what am I trying to say?
They get rid of you before.
Yes, they will.
They cut bait early.
And they know that it's probably a little early, but they're better with that than they are having you, like.
They want to take you off the shelf before you, like, go overripe.
That is the Bill Belichick way. He used to get rid of, like, the Richard Seymours of the world, and people are like, what are you talking about? He made a Pro Bowl, and he's like, he's 31. He's going to want a new contract next year. I ain't giving him a contract at 32, and he may have 2 years that are good in Oakland and makes me look like a fool. I'll see you 3 years from now when you're paying him $20 million a year who looks like the fool, and I got four draft picks for him, and that's...
It's true.
Well, it's what the Seahawks did with Russ, and at the time, people were like, you got to be crazy. Yeah. He's got good years left, and they look like geniuses for it.
Yeah, it's funny how a lot of moves that are widely panned at the time, you look back on and go, boy... Yep. That was smart. Like, I think about the Penix draft pick all the time.
Yeah. I mean, just going to sit there for a couple years.
Yeah, that looks, you know, Kirk Cousins is doing pretty well. I mean, Kirk Cousins is... I'll give you this list coming up next, but in terms of quarterback pressures, he's up there.
Yeah.
And he's running for his life.
He's still playing well.
But he's playing good. They're on top of that division. And you forget that they have Penix sitting there, and that timing of that may work out perfectly.
Yeah.
In a couple of years or maybe even next year when Cousins, or if Cousins goes down, or...
Yep, and then you're going to sit there and be like, not too... Jordan Love, right?
Yeah, so maybe we should just stop widely panning every move that's made until we figure out
We love names, and so when you see a name that you used to revere gets dealt for nothing, oh my God!
What are they even doing?
And then you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, that guy's kind of washed.
All right, NFL trade deadline is over. Okay, quarterback pressures. Can you name the top five most under duress?
Yeah, I think I can do that.
In the NFL?
Yeah.
I've got the stats.
Okay.
We'll see how good you are. We'll see what you know.
All right.
I don't know if you know anything.
Probably not.
That's next on The Fan.
Relax.
That's right. That's what this is. Whiskey bottle! Hey, we're going to get back to college football, top of the hour, our college football playoff rankings pregame show. Are you excited about that?
I'm ready to overreact. I'll tell you that much now.
It's going to be confusing.
Because these mean nothing, but I will tell you what. I will lose my S if someone is ranked one spot different than what I think they should be ranked. What I've already seen is people are going to be upset when SMU is ranked ahead Boise, and they're going to lose their S.
I put my power ratings together last night.
I'm very confident.
Yeah. Compare notes. But, it's 4 o'clock. Quarterbacks pressured the most this season.
Okay.
Was entering last week.
Okay. So we're not talking about pressure rate. We're just talking about number of times pressure, because they're two different things. Some teams, you know, throw the ball a lot more.
Yeah, that's true.
So which one are we going?
Pressures.
Okay. Well,
total pressures.
So I try to pay attention in the week. I usually kind of look through some of the advanced metrics, and the two teams that I think get, as far as a rate goes and the quickness of pressure, so I'm going to pick 1-2. I think it's the worst passing situations in the NFL, the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. Okay. Both of those guys are Drake May and Geno Smith. Dude, it's a free-for-all.
Patriots aren't on there.
No?
But I think that has to do with the fact that he hasn't played all year.
That makes sense.
Because this is by quarterback.
By quarterback. So is Geno on there?
Yeah, he's number two.
Yeah, Geno is... And Geno is more of a traditional pocket quarterback. He doesn't move around a bunch. He needs play action. So when you give him a clean pocket and he has time to throw, Geno throws the ball downfield as well as anyone in the league. Did you watch any of the Atlanta game? because Atlanta doesn't rush the quarterback. They have a bad pass rush. When you give him time to throw,
carved him up,
dude. He is surgical, which is why I like him. But when you put him under pressure, not a lot of guys are great under pressure. And to be fair, he is not. So I know C.J. Stroud is really under duress too.
Yeah, he's number one.
Yeah.
So Stroud has been pressured 136 times. Mm. Smith 135 times.
Yeah.
3, 4, 5.
And by the way, it's starting to affect C.J. Stroud. When you look at the way he's playing, he doesn't have his receivers. He's starting to develop some antsy feet. He's starting to see things that aren't there, and that's problematic.
It also kind of feels like he's thrown off his back foot and he's bailing a lot on those throws.
This is what I say. You got to be real careful. C.J. Stroud is so stinking good, but when you put someone with no run game and you're putting him back there and it's like you can't protect him and you don't have a good plan for him, you can cause real problems. The other one that has to be up there, well, the Carolina Panthers will be there, right? But again, he has
although they split quarterbacks.
He split quarterbacks, so he won't be up there. Who will be up there, though, is Caleb Williams.
Yeah, I was surprised. He's actually only number 9.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that's another situation that when you look at it, it's bad. It's their O-line is a sieve, and Caleb Williams has shown flashes, and there's regression these last 2 weeks, and that is, boy, I'll tell you what, that is problematic. Who else would be on there? Maybe Daniel Jones, but again, he missed some time, but I'm guessing Daniel Jones is going to be up there.
He's third,
yeah.
123 pressures.
So who am I missing in the top?
One is a surprise to me.
One's a surprise. Oh! I know this one. The surprise will be because everyone thinks about that they have an elite left tackle. The rest of the line is not elite, and their run game obviously has been a little spotty, and he drops back a lot. I'll bet you Brock Purdy is up there.
Number 4.
And Brock Purdy still plays really well.
109.
Under pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he is.
What do you think about that, Niners boy?
Well, this is. I mean,
things aren't going well for them. They're an old team that are very banged up.
But it's not Brock Purdy. People love to crap on Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy does well considering what is, for all the talk of Brock Purdy was a product of everything around him, he has proven that, look, he's not Patrick Mahomes.
But he's the right guy for a line that operates like that. He can get the ball out quick, he can make quick reads, and he's got guys that he can dump it off to.
Yeah, he would be I was going to say, I bet he's a surprise. And then is Herbert on there? Because they don't protect him very well either.
No.
No?
No. Number 6, I'll give you 5 last, but number 6 is Jaden Daniels. Number 7, Jalen Hurts. Again, these are quarterbacks most pressured.
Is it Mahomes?
Bo Nix is 8, Caleb Williams 9, and Aaron Rodgers 10.
Yeah, I should have gotten Rodgers. I would have thought Rodgers is higher because he sure seems to be
Rodgers,
scrambling a lot, too.
My top 5 would have been, I would have guessed, Stroud, Geno, Caleb Williams, Aaron Rodgers, and maybe Nix.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that I knew Brock was under duress. I would have sworn that Caleb Williams and Aaron Rodgers were both pressured more than Brock Purdy. But again, some of that probably goes to perception. And look, with quarterbacks, I'm always very patient. I hate sweeping statements and we judge way too quickly. And I said that there will be some growing pains along the way, and I'm still certain that there will be. Jaden Daniels every week is making me a believer. He's doing things. I don't know the best way to put this. This is like the C.J. Stroud thing. Although I think it's a better team than what C.J. Stroud. They're getting better results and it's better play. And C.J. Stroud had one of the best rookie seasons I'd seen of all time last year. How do I put it? The floor for Jaden Daniels is really good. He may not go down. There may be some come to Jesus moments and people may figure some stuff out. And he may get nicked up a little bit because he still takes a lot of big hits and he's not the biggest guy. There will not be he can only fall so far. What he's doing with not exactly the greatest cast around him, it's really eye-opening. And quite frankly, he's just fun to watch. And not saying that I thought that he was going to be great or that he was going to be a bust, but boy, I don't know how many people saw this because he is playing at a really, really elite level right now.
Kingsbury deserve credit there?
Yes.
Because
absolutely.
Oftentimes we give a lot of criticism to the coordinators and staffs of bad quarterbacks or young quarterbacks that don't develop. Well, how about the ones that are developing their players? I mean, that's a big deal.
And they're putting him in such a good spot and such good systems, and he's got a cohesive plan around him. And again, he's still under pressure, and he's great under pressure. And we're not seeing these big kind of rookie like F up moments. And he's getting better week to week with spreading the ball out and working more of the field. You know, at the beginning of the year, everything was outside of the numbers and kind of easy throws. And you're seeing it now where he is attacking the middle of the field, and it's not all checkdowns. It's really impressive. What we want to see is Kingsbury's offenses have every year had a second season collapse to them. It's just teams figure it out. And you're like, oh my God, what happened? I want to see if there's a rookie wall for him and if there's the second half collapse coming. But every week, even if there is a regression, I still think the regression, it's still going to be at a really high level, which is why I said, I think he has brought his floor up to where, like, even if it goes down, he's still a really good quarterback. And to the point where Washington went out and made a move to solidify a defense that was really wonky at the start of the year that's been playing better. I think Washington believes that they're a contender right now.
Yeah.
And until they prove otherwise, why wouldn't they?
And number five on the list of quarterbacks pressured the most this season, it is Kirk Cousins.
See, that's another one I would not
have guessed.
I wouldn't have guessed
it. You like that? Yeah,
that's a surprise.
Yeah, and he's been playing pretty well. So the top five quarterbacks pressured most, C.J. Stroud, Geno Smith, Daniel Jones, Brock Purdy, and Kirk Cousins.
And he's playing on one leg, too. He can't move for crap.
That guy's...
He's still out there slinging it.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
He's just good.
He is.
Kirk Cousins is just good.
But the problem is that he's not great, and when you're not great, we're always going to find a way to crap on you. It's not good enough just to be good or really good in this league.
We need him to win a big one.
Yeah.
A big game.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's a shame because he'll probably never have that moment. And that's when you end up being like Philip Rivers, you know? And we look back at you and we're like, no, you were really good for a long time. You just were not, you're not Pat Mahomes. You're not Josh Allen. And you're not those guys. And you never will be.
All right, the college football playoff rankings will be out shortly. Pre-game show next on The Fan.